Hi, this is Teresa Trent, and you are listening to Books to the Ceiling. Today, we're going to head out to Los Angeles to hang out with Nick Crane, private investigator. Like so many great thrillers in our excerpt today, you never know who's hiding something. So put on your PI fedora. Do they still wear fedoras? Because we are on the case in Rogues and Patriots by Patrick H. Moore. Here's a little more about the book. Patrick H. Moore's new novel, Rogues and Patriots, is book two of Moore's taut and topical three-volume series, in which veteran LA PI Nick Crane finds himself locked in a life-or-death struggle with Miles Amsterdam and the Principals, a powerful but soulless group of aristocratic right-wing super-patriots who are bent on turning the United States into a police state. 8 years after he and his team liquidated Frank Constantine, a murderous military shrink and close personal friend of Miles Amsterdam, Nick Crane finds himself abducted, beaten, and threatened with rendition to a black site in Egypt if he refuses to join the principal's cause, which includes attempting to incite anti-Muslim violence in every major American city. Crane, however, is rescued by his close friend and business partner, Vietnam War vet Bobby Moore, and the war is on. With its well-drawn characters, nonstop action, and sharp first-person narration, Rogues and Patriots will leave the reader breathless. It is a scintillating sequel to 27 Days, book one in this series, as once again Nick Crane stands tall as the world-weary PI everyman who takes on all comers in his drive to make America safe again for everyone. Now here is an excerpt from Rogues and Patriots. Part 1, Chapter 1. The frowning corpse of Roberto Diaz was found by a jogger on Friday morning at 6 a.m. on a windswept hillside in East Los Angeles. Cause of death? Still unknown. Time of death, according to the ME, around 2 a.m. Not an accident, not according to my LAPD friend, narcotics detective Tony Bott. Roberto had been Tony's best informant, and my friend was beside himself with anguish and rage. 12 hours before the body was discovered, Tony had charged into my office on the third floor of the Poseidon building near 3rd and Alameda, all wound up. First, he told me he'd been called down to the old Spring Street courthouse by a federal prosecutor named Sam Blaylock, who told him that henceforth his best informant, Roberto Diaz, would be off limits. Starting today, Diaz would report to one of Blaylock's DEA agents. He would work for a new DEA ICE task force dedicated to combating drug trafficking, sex trafficking, and human smuggling, not to mention narco-terrorism and murder for hire, the whole nine yards. It was strange, Tony said. Blaylock was all casual and dismissive, like jumping a man's informant was no big deal. He never even apologized, but I controlled myself. Got out of there fast. I figured I had to talk to Roberto, see how he felt about this. But when I called him, his voicemail was full. So I paged him. That was 3 hours ago. He still hasn't gotten back to me. That's not like Roberto. I'm worried. Tony paused, took a deep breath. So listen, Nick. Listen to what happened next. Either I'm crazy or something weird is going on. Tony stopped, pulled a bandana out of the pocket of his Tommy Bahama walking shorts, and mopped his forehead. He was wearing his casual designer clothes, Izod pullover and polo deck shoes to go with the shorts, and the mirrored Ray-Bans pushed up on his forehead. Why this instead of his usual dirty white boy riding in the Mexican car undercover look? Black jeans, colored t-shirt, and a blue bandana? Or his basic go-to-court look? Dockers, bland polo shirt, casual shoes? Simple. He had a date right across the street from my office at the 3rd Street Korean Bar and Grill at 7 p.m., or, as Tony explained, This woman came up to me in the parking lot outside the courthouse, right after my meeting with Blaylock. I was steaming and plenty worried, too, because Roberto is a simple kind of guy. Those sharks are the last people he needs to be working with. That's when I felt her breathing on the back of my neck. I turned around and she gave me a big smile. She looked about 40, stylish enough, I guess, but a wizened in that club woman kind of way. Wrinkles around her mouth and eyes, she says, "I need your help with your old informant, Roberto Diaz. That prick Blaylock wants me to shadow him. He thinks Diaz won't suspect anything because I'm a woman. Says he wants to know what Diaz is really doing. Yeah, right. How the hell should I know? I'm in over my head. Maybe we can catch a drink later and you can give me some tips." She acted like we were pals. It made no sense. And why in the hell would Blaylock want his own informant followed? I deadpanned and she said, "Look, I'm Tammy Wheat. I'm the new investigator with the U.S. Attorney's Office, and I need your help. Come on, Tony, be a sport. I would so appreciate it." He paused for a breath while I mulled it over. Tony was right. It made no sense. "Then," Tony said, "I was about to ask her why she thought I could help, but I stopped myself, because I figured if I help her out, it might help me stay connected to Roberto when and if he surfaces. So what I said was, 'Sure, I can meet you for an hour or so, around 7, but I'll have to bring a friend because we already had something planned for the evening.' She didn't like it, and I told her to take it or leave it. I guess she decided to take it." I rubbed the back of my neck, thinking. Spoke. "It does seem weird. Why in the hell would she come up to you 5 minutes after Blaylock gave you the black spot? It makes no sense. I never told you this, but 3 years ago, Blaylock was the AUSA on a 20-pound federal meth case where my lawyer friend Jack Snow got the client a year and a day. A year and a day with no cooperation. Outrageous. I remember thinking at the time that it seemed kind of sketchy." "Something's up with that Blaylock fool. I can feel it," Tony nodded firmly. "And Roberto's been spooked for a while now. He was approached by some undercover guys about a week ago in a North Hollywood bar. He managed to shake them, but he was freaked out, said he was going to disappear for a while. Which was fine up until today when I learned what the feds had planned for him. He's not here legally. They'll hold that over his head." "Does Roberto have a local case?" Tony grinned, a bit sheepishly. "I know. He's working off a case that's never even been filed. Jack Snow says that's pretty much taboo among the feds, but that you local boys do it all the time." "He's right," said Tony. "Those federal bastards have no mercy. They put you to work setting people up, and then they still send you to prison, whereas we local boys have heart." Chapter 2. At 7 o'clock, we walked across the street to the Korean Bar and Grill. A smiling Tammy Wheat greeted us halfway down the bar.
"Gentlemen, how nice of you to be on time."
"Always," said Tony. I stepped forward and introduced myself as Nick, perfunctory handshake. Tammy was about what I expected, on the petite side, toned and tanned, with a determined look in her close-set blue eyes. She was wearing expensive jeans, a frilly white blouse, and a brown leather bomber jacket. "It's too noisy in here for conversation," I said, nearly shouting. "Let's sit on the patio." Outside, we sat in swinging chairs suspended on chains under a bamboo awning. A moment of awkward silence, waiting for the drinks to arrive, I stepped into the breach. "Nice place, huh? Whenever I get the chance, I sit out here with a Pellegrino while I write up my case notes." Our drinks arrived, more chit-chat, then Tony got down to business.
"So what can I do for you, Ms. Wheat? You said something about needing pointers on how to shadow Roberto Diaz?"
"That's right," said Tammy. "But please, call me Tammy. I'm pretty new to this game. And although they've trained me, I've never done surveillance on my own before. And because Diaz has disappeared, I've got to figure out how to find him." Tony and I exchanged a quick glance. Was it possible Blaylock and his team had not yet located Roberto? This would help explain why Tammy had appeared out of nowhere asking Tony for help.
"Just so you know," said Tony slowly, "I can't find him either. The damn guy has disappeared, and this can be a slow game. I've had informants disappear for months at a time and then reappear with a new target." He paused and shook his head, his lips set in a hard line. "But more to the point, Why on earth should I throw you a bone when your people have made it crystal clear that you're stealing my prize informant?
Wow, said Tammy. You're angry. I would be too, I suppose.
A moment of silence, then she plunged ahead. But there's no need to be defensive. We're all on the same side here, aren't we? I mean, we all want to indict these drug trafficking bastards and lock them up, protect our borders and all that good stuff.
I wonder, said Tony, cracking a half smile, which, given his mood, dripped more menace than mirth. If we are on the same side, the way I see it, your people want to fuck me and use Roberto. Then, when he runs out of information, you'll indict him for trafficking and lock him up. Then, when he's done his time, you'll deport him. A bad deal all around.
Tammy was shocked by Tony's vitriol. At least she looked shocked. My friend's cell phone pinged and he punched in his code, stared at his screen, worry lines erupting across his forehead. I stepped in. Here's what you need to understand, Tammy. Detective Bott has every reason to be angry. The standard procedure here in L.A. is for our federal colleagues to share informants with local law enforcement. It's been that way for decades, and here you and your team go and break the rules without any reasonable explanation.
Tammy shrugged, a casual lifting and falling of her shoulders, almost too casual.
I understand, and just so you know, like any good conservative, I have great respect for precedent. But this situation is different. We are a brand new state-of-the-art task force, and we are taking all due precautions to keep everything in-house in order to avoid any possible slip-ups.
Tony looked up from his phone, treated Tammy to his best scowl, went back to his readout.
Well, that's completely out of line, I said. You're implying Detective Bott would screw things up unless he's cut out completely. That's downright insulting. Not to mention ironic, considering here you are trying to persuade my friend to help you out with Roberto when, according to your boss, Sam Blaylock, he's not even supposed to go near the damn guy.
Tammy looked at Tony, who was ignoring her, looked at me, and smiled. Broad, friendly, and phony as hell.
Why should you be insulted? It's no skin off your back. You're not law enforcement. In fact, Mr. Crane, unless I'm mistaken, you're one of those rare PIs who never even was a cop.
Hit me like a gut punch. This woman, notwithstanding her green and helpless act, knew exactly who I was and what I did for a living, which made no sense. Unless... I took a long pull from my Heineken. At that moment, Tony's phone pinged again. This time, he swiped up, glanced at the number, frowned, and held the phone to his ear.
Holy shit! The blood drained from his face. Gotta roll. He stood up, flung down some bills, and was gone within seconds. I had a bad feeling. Diaz. And I had problems of my own. Here I was, alone with this peculiar woman who seemed to know more about me than she had any business knowing. I decided to probe.
Sorry my friend had to leave. I didn't see that coming, but I'm curious.
How did you know I'm Nick Crane? We've never met before.
She looked at me, no smile this time. Instead, a measured, thoughtful look, like a hunter surveying her prey.
Well, if you really want to know, we know all about you, Mr. Crane. We know you've almost lost your investigator's license countless times for breaking the rules. It's amazing you still have a license to carry. Suffice to say, you're not too popular in certain circles.
She was baiting me. Much as I wanted to, I decided not to bite. I stood up, nodded shortly, and walked away, leaving her there on the patio, one hand wrapped around the waist of her St. Pauli girl, the other reaching for her phone.
And that was an excerpt from Rogues and Patriots. Rogues and Patriots is available on Amazon and through Goodreads, and I will be leaving links at the bottom of this post so that you can pick up your copy. Now here's a little more about our author. Patrick H. Moore is a Los Angeles-based private investigator, sentencing mitigation specialist, and crime writer. He has been working in this field since 2003 and has worked virtually in all areas, including drug trafficking, sex crimes, crimes of violence, and white-collar fraud. Patrick says,
There's no feeling quite like walking into a prison to consult with a client knowing that he or she is facing many long years behind bars, unless you can thread the needle and convince a skeptical federal judge to give your guy or gal a second chance. Criminals are not known for putting a high priority on telling the truth. Neither are cops and prosecutors. This is no easy task, but mastering this job, which combines art, science, and intuition, has given Patrick the tools to write realistic crime fiction that depicts the unpredictable and violent world of cops, convicts, prosecutors, and defense attorneys. 27 Days, Patrick's first traditionally published thriller, was published on February 6, 2023, by Down and Out Books. It is the first in a three-part series in which veteran Los Angeles private investigator Nick Crane battles a group of aristocratic domestic terrorists known as the Principals. 27 Days was recently named a finalist in the general fiction category at the 2023 American Fiction Awards. The second book in Patrick's three-part series is entitled Rogues and Patriots. It was published by Down and Out Books on April 22, 2023. If you want to catch up with Patrick on the internet, his website is patrickhmoorewriter.com. That's all we have this week on Books to the Ceiling. If you enjoyed this podcast, please take a moment to follow us, subscribe, rate, or review. It is very appreciated. Also, if you belong to a book club and you're looking for new and interesting books to read, consider using Books to the Ceiling as a reference. Thank you so much for stopping by. You have been listening to Books to the Ceiling, and this is Teresa Trent, hoping to see you again next time with a new mystery.